This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. This week, I'll be speaking with Jamie Pizzi from PA Courts about the court's role in battling human trafficking. I'll also be speaking with Rashida Lovely, president of New Wave Enterprise, about her Housing Jubilee event coming up Wednesday, February 12th at the University of Scranton. Doc and Chewy from Froggy 101 speak with State Police Master Trooper David Peters about the State Police Law and Leadership Academy for individuals interested in pursuing a career in law enforcement. WILK Sue Henry speaks with Kristen Willage, chair of the Wilkes-Barre Iram Temple Restoration Project. And KRZ's Rocky and Liz speak with Woman of Impact nominee Stacey Kyle from Geisinger Health about National Go Red Day and the American Heart Month kickoff. It's all coming up. Special Edition gets started right now. This is Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. My guest is Jamie Pizzi, representing the PA Courts, and we're here to talk about human trafficking. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Brian.
What are some of the important things we need to know regarding human trafficking?
Okay, well, I always like to start with dispelling some of the common myths and misconceptions about trafficking, because they really do a disservice to the public in understanding the crime, and that can even lead to victims not understanding how they're being victimized themselves, and victims ending up getting charged with crimes and all sorts of negative outcomes. I think a lot of what the general public views human trafficking as is through the lens of popular media and Hollywood films, like the 2008 movie with Liam Neeson, Taken.
Right.
That movie has done a lot of disservice to what human trafficking actually looks like. And it also has led persons to think that human trafficking happens primarily in other countries or involves foreign nationals exclusively, when in reality, we have a lot of domestic human trafficking, and it goes a lot. It's a lot less dramatized than what you'd see in videos. And unfortunately, Hollywood keeps perpetuating these types of misconceptions. Even the more recent movie Sound of Freedom that came out in 2023 really perpetuates the idea that child trafficking is not happening in the U.S. and that it's more of a international problem, which it is. But we need to my job is to focus more on U.S. trafficking.
So it might be part of the story, but not necessarily the whole story. Just like one of the misconceptions I heard is confusing human trafficking with human smuggling.
Yes. Yes, that is a huge one. Human smuggling is a crime against a national border, whereas human trafficking is a crime against a person. And under both Pennsylvania state and our federal laws, a person could be trafficked without even leaving a room or a house. There is no movement requirement. And unfortunately, I think also the name human trafficking, people think, oh, trafficking, we must have movement, but that's not the case.
Yeah, I was speaking with some people from the Northeast PA Task Force Against Human Trafficking, and that was one of the big things that stood out for me, that, yeah, it's not something you have to do moving state to state or across any borders. A person could be trafficked in their house without people knowing about it. And again, I'd say the difference between human trafficking and human smuggling is another big difference. What other misconceptions do you think there are out there?
Well, I think another huge one is that human trafficking involves primarily kidnapping and force. When that does, that can be a part of it, but it is really characterized by psychological manipulation and coercive control, which results in fear. So traffickers will tell their victims that they need to be afraid of the persons that actually can protect them, like law enforcement, in the courts, and other governmental agencies. And then oftentimes when persons in these agencies don't have good education about trafficking, they may not be recognizing some of the signs, because we know a trafficking victim is not going to show up like, "Hi, I'm being trafficked." It just doesn't work like that. And then they can end up being treated like criminals, because a part of trafficking is being forced to commit crimes such as prostitution. And that reinforces what the trafficker is telling them and keeps them entangled in the manipulation.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a total gaslighting that I'm the only one you can trust. Everyone else is out to get you or will get you without my help. So you need me and no one else.
Yes, well said.
This is Special Edition. My guest from the PA courts, Jamie Pizzi, here to talk about human trafficking. I understand there's some legislation out in an effort to stop human trafficking from happening. Can you tell us something about that?
Let me take a look at what has been put out there recently. I know in the past year, we have had the means of patronizing added to the human trafficking law. Prior to that, I believe it was the Buyer Beware Act, but actually don't quote me on that.
Okay.
That prior to patronizes being added to Chapter 30 in the Crimes Code for Human Trafficking, our law was lacking what the federal law had, because without persons buying commercial sex or forced very cheap labor from trafficking victims, trafficking wouldn't exist, right? We know the basic economic principles of supply and demand. So it was really important that the Pennsylvania legislature added patronizes into our crimes code so that our prosecutors are able to go after the demand for sex trafficking and labor trafficking.
Now, is there any specific type of person, young, old, man, woman, that would be more subject to human trafficking than another?
So the thing about human trafficking is really anyone can be a victim. Traffickers are really astute at picking out vulnerabilities in persons and exploiting them. So the more vulnerabilities a person is facing, the more likely they are to be involved in a trafficking situation. Like, we know our LGBTQ and trans youth can be susceptible to trafficking because they may have family situations that involve them being out on their own, perhaps becoming homeless. And there are studies that will show you that once an adolescent becomes homeless, they are at a severe risk at becoming sex trafficked. And fortunately, the law is has been very helpful to address that juvenile trafficking, because anyone under the age of 18 who exchanges sex for anything of value, so that could be engaging in commercial sex so you have something to eat or a place to stay, someone who trades sex for something like that with a child is automatically a trafficking victim under both federal and state law. I'm sorry, they're automatically a human, they can be charged with human trafficking if they buy sex from a child, offer a place to stay for a child in exchange for sex.
That's a terrible situation for any child or young adult to be caught up in, where you're basically bartering for human needs in order to survive.
Yes, and that's what we see with both adult and child survivors of sex trafficking. A lot of it is survival.
Where can we find out more information regarding human trafficking?
So our PA courts webpage, if you could just Google PA courts human trafficking, we have a lot of really great resources that talk about both case statistics about what's going on in Pennsylvania in terms of human trafficking cases. We also have information about situations of concern. Advocates are trying to get more away from red flags because they can be a little bit lacking in terms of knowing the details and really getting to the situations that show someone may be being trafficked. Like, a list that's going to be like, this person has a branding tattoo. They may have this, they may have that, they may be fearful. While all of that can be true, like no signs are, no trafficking case completely encapsulates all those lists, right? So it's more important to understand situations that are concerning. So we highlight some of those situations of concern. We also have different bench resources for judges who want to know more about the trafficking law. And some information about local trafficking coalitions on there, like you mentioned being up with the Northeast Coalition. Just general information there.
Okay. Anything else, Jamie, that we haven't touched upon that you'd like to let us know regarding human trafficking and what to watch out for if you happen to encounter someone who you feel or suspect may be trafficked?
So if you do encounter someone that you feel is being trafficked, you have a few options. Of course, we have the National Human Trafficking Hotline, 1-888-373-7888. But you can also report suspected trafficking to the Pennsylvania State Police tip line. And that may, depending on the situation, be a little faster, I've heard. And that is 1-888-292-1919. But I always tell people, stay informed, stay away from, if you're going to be talking about human trafficking or putting information out there about trafficking, please stay away from imagery that has young girls bound, like their hands tied up, that kind of really aggressive imagery that gets away from the psychological manipulation that is truly at the heart of human trafficking,
which is probably part of the psychological manipulation of the person that's being trafficked and anyone else that might encounter it.
Yes.
Jamie, tell me exactly what the court's role is regarding human trafficking.
Sure. So a big part of what we do with the Stop Grant program is providing education to judges and court personnel about human trafficking, and that education teaches our courts to try and be more trauma-informed when dealing with trafficking survivors. We had a panel yesterday, actually, where we had Judge the Honorable Victoria Christensen, who's in charge of RAP Court in Philadelphia, which is a really great specialty court that works to help adolescents who are trafficked or at risk of being trafficked get on the right path, so to speak. And part of what she was saying is how important it is for the courts to do things like take breaks, meet survivors where they're at, and engage in trauma-informed things of that nature. We also know that our courts can do a lot in terms of helping survivors who have been criminalized for their trafficking exploitation. Pennsylvania law has a really great section called vacature, and it allows trafficking survivors to petition the court to vacate, which is, this is much more significant than just expungement. This is the court saying you should not have been charged with this crime in the first place. So persons who have been exploited and have charges for prostitution, criminal trespass, disorderly conduct, loitering and prowling at night, obstructing highways and other passageways, and simple possession of a controlled substance are able to petition the court to get those convictions completely taken off of their criminal records, which is really amazing and can be life-changing for persons that are just trying to get back on their feet.
That's amazing. And what a relief that would be should the person being trafficked was made aware of that, because that would take a load off and it would empower them to get away from that particular situation so it can no longer be held over their heads.
Right. And it can go a long way with them helping to get loans for college and being hired at jobs. A lot of jobs require you to have a pretty clean criminal background.
Right.
So it's life changing and something that the courts can do to put survivors on a really bright path.
Okay. Jamie Pizzi, I appreciate you joining us here on Special Edition. Thank you for all that information.
Yes, of course.
Next on Special Edition, I'll be speaking with Rashida Lovely, president of New Wave Enterprise, about her Housing Jubilee event coming up on Wednesday at the University of Scranton. And Doc and Chewy from Froggy 101 speak with State Police Master Trooper David Peters about State Police Law and Leadership's Academy for individuals interested in pursuing a career in law enforcement. It's all coming up when Special Edition continues. This is Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes. My guest is Rashida Lovely, here to talk about a big housing jubilee coming to the University of Scranton on Wednesday, February 12th. Good morning, Rashida.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. That's great to have you back on the program. Something we kind of missed out on talking the last time you were here, so now we can make up for it. Tell us about this housing jubilee.
Yeah, so we are having a housing jubilee at the University of Scranton. And it's going to be made up of housing activists, community organizations, our banking institutions, our charities, and our state, local, and federal partners to talk about the housing crisis and what we can do to solve it.
That's something that, I mean, housing has been an issue just about in every state of the union, whether it's housing needs for people that have been affected by wildfires in California or hurricanes in the South. It definitely is a crisis. And you're going to talk about how we can kind of make more housing and some other areas?
Yes. So we do want to come up with what we call a comprehensive and actionable plan at the end of the Jubilee. And we're hoping to incorporate all the ideas from across the entire NEPA region. What we would like to see is new construction, housing built, whether it be some apartment buildings, single family homes. And also, we do have a lot of vacant properties. So we would like to maybe focus on a rehabilitation of those properties so that we can use the housing stock that we already have available.
Now, the one statistic I had heard, and it sounds completely crazy, but that there are 6 vacant homes for every 1 homeless person.
Well, I do believe in our region, our numbers, I don't think it's that high, but very close. And we do have a lot of vacant buildings. And so I think that if we incorporated some of these warehouses, these defunct schools, we can address many of the issues that we have. Because it's obviously we have an issue with like veterans being homeless. But now a big number of folks who are families are now experiencing homelessness at a level that just wasn't seen before. So in order for us to address these concerns, we're going to have to use a bunch of different ideas in order to fix the problem.
There are no bad ideas in this. Just bring them all together, and out of all the ideas that you receive, something might just stick.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the areas that we really want to focus in on is that technology and innovation in housing, because we don't want to just build housing or rehab housing. We want to get the cost down, and the utility costs are through the roof. I think, as I told you before, it's our utility bills on average in the state of Pennsylvania is 4% higher than the national average. And it's scheduled to go up again by the summertime. And this is just, it's not something that's sustainable. So we would like to have our folks in leadership look at the technologies that's available so that we could reduce energy consumption first when we look at how to address housing. And then we want to incorporate new technology that'll help us continue to drive the cost down, because you don't want to just build housing. You need to make it affordable. And that's the piece that's been missing for a long time.
Yes, I believe in our last discussion, you talked about a lot about green technology. I saw a piece the other day about a church in Lewisburg that saved quite a bit of money by putting solar panels up on their church. And I guess they use the church building for a lot of things rather than just like one Sunday mass a week. They use it for like a homeless shelter. They use it for kitchen and things of that nature. So it's just one possibility, solar heating, and there are many others out there. This is Special Edition. I'm Brian Hughes speaking with Rashida Lovely, talking about a housing jubilee that's coming up on Wednesday, February 12th, 9 to 5 at the University of Scranton. And just give me a rundown of the course of events for this jubilee.
So it's a whole day of a lot of work that's going to be done. So in the very beginning of the day, from 9 to 10, we're going to have a press conference with our leadership, our state reps, Kyle Mullins, Kyle Donahue, Bridget Kalzikowski. I believe State Rep Eddie Pashinsky will be there, and the staff from our new congressman, Rob Bresnahan.
Yes.
He will also be there. And then we'll have our local council folks across Luzerne and Lackawanna County, and our counties will be present. And so during that time, we'll do meet and greets and we'll network. And then afterwards, we will talk about the innovation pieces that are necessary. We will also have workshops that will bring our ideas together. And at the end of those workshops, we're going to put together what we believe will be a good comprehensible plan. We're then going to give them back out to our partners. And then we're going to work to put those plans in place within the very immediate future. We're talking between 5 and 6 months this year.
That is great. Great news indeed. You're not streaming this by any chance, are you? I'm just
Actually,
curious.
I believe we are. I think it's going to be on Facebook.
Okay.
It'll be streamed live on Facebook. And then it'll be recorded. So we'll have it on different websites for folks to watch the entire event. I mean, it is 8 hours.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
But it'll be chock full of a lot of knowledge. And I think people will be interested in what we plan on doing to fix the price.
Oh, I think so indeed. Housing Jubilee 2025. It's coming up on Wednesday, February 12th. Is there a deadline to come to this event?
So, yes, we're asking our folks to register by the end of this week. We're almost out of tickets. We kind of expected there to be a little over 100 folks there. It's looking like 120. So we're reaching our cap.
We'll get a crowbar. We'll cram them in. Don't you worry.
Yes.
Anything else you want to tell us about the Housing Jubilee?
Yes. So we did talk about the innovation portion, but I want to stress the idea that we really need to look towards the future, future technologies such as blockchain to solve our problems, because we can't keep doing what we've done in the past. And there are other cities that incorporated these type of technologies, such as the city of Baltimore. Reno has just put in blockchain technology for their housing stock. Cities like Miami Lakes and Detroit, they're now accepting cryptocurrency to pay their real estate taxes.
Wow.
And, you know, so there's so much forward thinking happening, and Pennsylvania needs to be at the head of this curve, not behind.
Okay. Well, as we have this conversation, Governor Josh Shapiro is putting his budget up for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Is there anybody from the state government that are going to be there other than the state representatives?
Yes. The Department of Environmental Protection will be there. They will be doing workshops as well, because, you know, the environment has to be in consideration when you're thinking about what's going to happen with the with housing. And so we're hoping that we have some folks from Governor Shapiro's office. We're in talks with them now. So I believe we'll have some folks from his staff present as well.
All right. And we're talking about a Housing Jubilee 2025 happening Wednesday, February 12th at the University of Scranton, talking about everything from housing to food security. Environmental Justice Workshop is going on, and then just a breakout for community organizations to kind of get together, put their heads together, and see what they can come up with. Where can we find out more information about this event?
Well, you can go to nepopec.org. The information will be there, and there'll also be a PDF available that you can download to see the itinerary. Also, all the folks who are going to come to the event will be listed there. And if you have any questions, there's a contact form you can fill out. And the more input we have, the better.
Okay. Rashida Lovely, I appreciate you joining us. Now we got it in. Everything you need to talk about.
Yes.
We got quite a bit done the first time around. Now we got the Housing Jubilee in. Once again, it's Wednesday, February 12th at the University of Scranton from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. in the DeNaples Center, fourth floor. Familiar with that place?
Absolutely.
I went to school there.
Oh.
Many thousands of years ago. Don't think they'd even remember me. Appreciate you joining me here on Special Edition.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Trooper David Peters, Troop Ann in Hazleton.
Yeah.
I can't really clap that well. The old wing isn't working as well. But thank you for coming in today.
I appreciate you having us.
I learned something from you already. He said, if you only went to the academy, you would learn the correct way to fall down.
And, this is true.
It's too late. But I did kind of what you said. You said we were just talking in general because my shoulder's all at this point. And you said, yeah, you really don't put your hands down when you fall. And I didn't. But, you know, when you get brittle and my age, Dave.
You might not have the chance to put your hands down.
Yeah. That's cool. But tell everybody why you're here. This is exciting stuff.
Yeah. So we're here to promote the Law and Leadership Academy. It's a 15-week program, 2 days a week, one Saturday a month for individuals 18, but we prefer them being out of high school, considering when we run it, all the way up to age 38 that are looking to pursue a career in law enforcement. The program itself will help you prepare for a Law Enforcement Academy training, which a lot of people don't understand what that is or the differences between the State Police Academy as well as what a Municipal Officers Training Academy is. You know, there's a lot of things that go into those academies, such as time management, stress management, physical fitness, things of that nature that maybe is a little lost on some of the other generations to, you know, just to get them prepared.
Right. But now, is there a difference, like, between going into the state police or going into a local police department? Do you have to do, to be state police, go through the regular one first and then go through the state police academy?
No, our academy is the same. The only really difference that I would say between the two academies is a local academy, it's you go there during the day, say it's 7 to 3, 8 to 4, and at the end of that day, you know, you get to go home.
Right.
Or if you're dorming there, you dorm there. Where in our academy, you are there. And you do get to come home every other weekend after a certain amount of time, providing you're making your required runs, you're passing your room inspections and things of that nature. So that's the only really difference.
But give somebody an example of a typical day. All right, first day you show up at the academy, and it's funny what we were talking about off the air about how, you know, some people are like, oh, really? Work? This is going to be a tough one. But you know, that's how you weed out people that don't need to be there.
Absolutely. I mean, you show up the first day of our academy, and I mean, they are on you. Mm-hmm. They are beginning the process of making you learn to be comfortable while you're uncomfortable.
Correct.
To deal with that, you know, on you, direct, you know, orders yelling at you and things of that nature to disorient you. Again, seeing how you're reacting. Can you follow direction? Can you handle simple tasks in a chaotic environment?
Right. And, what's it like now for people that want to get in? Are you getting more? Or are you getting less? Or like, what's going on right now?
I think the numbers have gone up and down.
Yeah.
A couple of years, I believe a year and a half, or it could be 2 years now, we waived our college requirement. So now you just need to be 20 years of age, possess a high school diploma or GED. You can go on to PATrooper.com, find out, sign up for the test, register. After a written test, you move on to a polygraph. After the polygraph, you go into an extensive background check. You pass all that, you move on to a physical fitness test. And I think that's where the big hang-up is with a lot of people I speak to in college is that most young people don't realize you're going to take a physical fitness test to be law enforcement. And that doesn't matter on any level.
Right.
I mean, it's not getting waived. So kind of jetway into the program here is that's a way for us to like start moving you in the process of understanding physical fitness and what you need to do to pass that test. But again, you pass all that, you pass the psychological, you get an appointment to an academy class.
Now, what are some things in the physical fitness test? Like, am I coming in there? You're looking at me like, Chewy, this isn't for you.
I think you just answered it.
What do you think?
We believe you start somewhere.
Okay, so what are some of the things in it? Like a mile run? Or
so you have to run a mile and a half.
Okay, and what time?
Depends on age. So basically, we'll go with 2029 because that's the most demographic.
That's where you fall in.
Yeah, I'm 27.
There you go. So you'd have to run a mile and a half in 13 minutes and 16 seconds.
Easy.
Do 26 push-ups our way.
Hard.
And run the 300-meter sprint in, I believe, 62.1 seconds.
All right, so I run like a 40-yard dash in about 4 seconds, so I'm pretty good.
If you were doing that, you wouldn't be sitting across from me right now. You'd be playing on Sundays.
I know, I would be. But no, so I mean, and that's what you guys do. You guys help people get ready for that. You know, for that, one of the things that you guys do is help people get ready for that those tests.
So when they come into us for the program, they have to take what we would refer to as the PRT, physical readiness testing. We assess them from there and, you know, kind of go from there. And I mean, what you see a lot of is that the people maybe don't know how to run properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we always joke that everybody knows how to run away from something, but the goal to run away from something isn't multiple miles. So how do you teach someone to run the proper way gait-wise so they're using the most efficiency of their body? And once you start teaching people that and they keep repetitively do it, you see them get better. I mean, we've had people come into this program that maybe are running a 23-minute mile and a half, which, you know, in all senses, not good, especially if you're trying to test for us. And by the time they leave in mid-August and graduate and take the final PRT, they're running in 14s.
Wow.
Nice.
So, that's impressive.
Now, I did hear you say, I don't know if you picked up on that, you said not just a push-up, a state police push-up. What's the difference?
So basically, you're in a push-up position. Okay. They're going to put their fist under your chest.
Okay.
And you're going to lower your body down in a controlled motion, touch their fist, not bouncing off and not using momentum. So those you know, YouTube or TikTok push-ups you see where they're pounding them out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Nope, you're going all the way up, coming all the way down. And if you're not touching, they're not going to count it. So a lot of people, like I said, that get in our program that maybe can't do push-ups and we get them there, it's training them to understand it, go beyond. Like for a male, it's 26. For a female, it's 13. But if you can barely, if you could just do 13, which is great, when you get down there to take your physical fitness test, you're going to be nervous. And if they stop counting some, and you know you in your head you can only do 13, your body just for some reason wants to shut down and tighten yeah. up. And then you end up failing, and that's not what we hope for you.
All right, we have Trooper David Peters here. He's from Troop N in Hazleton, and it's called the State Police Law and Leadership Academy. So if you're listening right now, or if you're a parent of someone who's going to fall in the age group we're going to talk about, who's thinking about a career joining the state police, Trooper Peters, tell everybody what they need to do.
What they should do is they should reach out to me either through my email, which is dapeters@pa.gov, or they can contact me at the station, which is 570-459-3900, and my extension is 269. By contacting me, I'll go ahead and send the program details and application to them. And what's important in that program details is it provides a lot of insight into the program. And so we basically go from mid-May through mid-August, mm-hmm. 2 days a week, one Saturday a month. And what's important on the Saturdays is it's what we refer to as scenario day. So basically everything that we taught you in a classroom setting, we're going to put you through a battery of different things and evaluate you on the skills we think are necessary in law enforcement, especially effective communication and things of that nature. So the program provides such a great insight into a law enforcement academy structure, which I think a lot of young people coming into this profession don't understand the intensity to right. which that is going to happen.
Right, and you'll let them know right up front, this is what we expect, and if you think you got it, and you can do it, by all means. This is probably a perfect move for somebody.
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, what do we see is the most people that a lot of people get out if they're actually currently in maybe our hiring process that mm-hmm. would put them on track to go to the academy in November, or someone looking to go to Act 120 class in October or January. You get free physical fitness. So if you're somebody who, you know, looks and says, I don't know that I, you know, I can run a mile and a half in that time and I'm going to need help to push myself, this is where comes in. We've been successful in that regard.
So this is an amazing program for you to try out to see if you have what it takes, because you may decide after all, okay, this is not for me. But if you do,
yeah.
this probably gives you a slight advantage when you're going into the academy because you kind of know what's coming.
Yes. So that's the other, I guess you consider it a treat if you're somebody who's been working through the program is we actually take you to the State Police Academy for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a show and tell day. I mean, you're literally going to go there and be treated like a cadet. You're going to see the intensity of the PT instructors when they're doing a workout and the run. You're also going to see an academy class in there, which is always the case. So you get to see how someone operates and moves and how they're conformed and doing what they're doing. Again, valuable insight that none of us, I can honestly say in my career, I didn't know what to expect when I went there. They just said run hills. That's what everybody would tell you, run hills. And you're like, oh, what does that mean? And then you get there and you realize, I know what they mean now.
Yeah.
You run hills. You know, they didn't tell you about the shoe shining and the making the bed a certain way.
I was going to say, what was the toughest thing for you when you went into the academy? Because you went in at what age?
28.
All right, 28. You're older than Chewy.
Yeah.
And what was the toughest thing when you got there?
Probably the shoe shining.
Yeah.
And like just shining everything. Like it's not just your shoes, it's every piece of leather. And maybe not having a background in that, you know, people are like, oh, he's just polishing water. But you can actually kind of too much water, too much polish. And
are your shoes shined right now?
No. Not as good as they should be, I should say.
Yeah. I was going to say, they look pretty good.
They should be better.
Yeah.
They're right. shined enough for radio, is what I'm saying. For those watching it,
yes.
they look amazing.
They're
great
supposed
job.
To be able to look like glass.
Yeah.
And when you're in the academy, they do look like glass.
I bet they do.
So you want to go home.
What are the age groups again?
So basically 18 to 38.
Mm-hmm.
However, those 18-year-olds, we like them out of high school. But I can honestly say the last couple of weeks, I've kind of talked to some schools and some people about, a lot of high schools are doing like career exploration.
Yeah.
So a young person has enough credits to graduate. They really don't need to attend the daily school. I've entertained that as well. If they're going to let them show up for our program, you know, as long as they're 18, let them get some really good insight if this is a career they want to pursue.
It's an amazing career, and you're doing it. We were just talking off air, 26 years, yeah. Pennsylvania State Police, and you just got a promotion, though. You're going to be handling this program statewide.
I wouldn't call that a promotion.
You've just been ordered to handle this.
No, I know. It's a great opportunity to, like I said, the department would like to grow this program. What we're seeing is people coming through it and not only making it to the academy, but being retained. I mean, most people don't realize if you get to our academy and you quit or fail out, you can never be a state trooper ever again in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So it's getting them there and getting them prepared to withstand what's going to happen for 27 weeks and become, you know, viable troopers on the road. So, you know, currently we have this program here, but then there's one in Philly, there's one in Hershey, and the goal is to start one up in May in Erie and the Greensburg area. With sites in the central part of the state in 2026.
Gosh, you're going to be putting some mileage on your car, huh?
Yeah, grow it, grow the opportunity for a lot of people.
Well, it's called the Pennsylvania State Police Law and Leadership Academy. And one more time, Dave, how do people get a hold of you to get more information?
Well, if they're currently in college, I've sent it out to the directors, their criminal justice instructors locally. If not, it's through me, email dapeters. @pa.gov. If you're currently in our process, the recruiters up here in the Northeast have it as well, or they can call the office at 570-459-3900, and my extension is 269.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Do you have any more questions?
I don't think so.
You can do it. You can change your career right now.
You know, you're right. I don't think I passed the physical part.
Well, you're being negative right now. He's got a wedding coming up in August. You've heard about this. And he wants to lose 100 pounds between now and August.
We could do that.
I've got like 20 more to go.
Okay. We could do this for you.
Don't lie to a state trooper.
What time do I...
So we kind of joked that, you know, even if you just wanted to, just make sure you plan your vacation the third week of August and you can get a free 15-week program.
Look at that.
That's not bad.
To get yourself in shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not going to... We can get you there.
Yeah, okay.
It's funny. He's leaning back so far away from you, he's almost going through the wall right now.
He's comfortable.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dave. We appreciate you coming in this
morning. Thanks for the opportunity.
Next on Special Edition, WILK's Sue Henry speaks with Christian Willage, the chair of the Wilkes-Barre Iram Temple Restoration Project. And KRZ's Rocky and Liz speak with Woman of Impact nominee Stacy Kyle from Geisinger Health about National Go Red Day and the American Heart Month kickoff. It's all coming up when Special Edition continues.
And for many moons, I've been staring at the Iram Temple. As somebody who lived in Wilkes-Barre for a while and as somebody who goes to King's College all the time to teach and hang out, to me, it's so remarkable. I can't help but want it to stay. And there is an effort to do so. I must say that these things take time. It is something that is worth the wait in my world. And I think Christian Willage would agree. The chair of the Iram Temple Restoration Project, right, Christian?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
And fair warning, I've got two sick kids home today, and I'm trying to keep them out of here, but hopefully we don't have any interruptions.
And if as somebody who loves children, believe me, I don't care. And I think that it's great that you've agreed to do this and you have other duties too as assigned. So I'm good on it. If it happens, it happens. Maybe we'll ask them about the restoration project.
Oh, they call it the castle.
In your world, can you tell me about the first time you became aware of the Iram Temple and maybe the first time that you set eyes on it? Because it is extremely unique across this whole country.
That's an interesting question because as somebody who, lived in the Wyoming Valley for much of my life, I almost had like a blind spot to it. It's so like out of place that I never sort of, I guess, registered with me or like understanding what the building was, So I'm kind of embarrassed to admit it wasn't until sort of later in life that I really, began to admire the thing to be honest, I did let myself in many years ago.
Oh, you and about 100,000 other people in Wyoming Valley, right?
Not anymore, though. We've got a fence with barbed wire at the top. So, but and when I went in there, I just couldn't believe it. Just how spectacular it was, and additionally, I mean, I've spent a lot of time going to concerts and in sort of spaces that had been repurposed with, you know, sort of that big flat floor format, which, you know, probably close to half of the touring acts today, you know, they don't want seats, right? They want a big flat open floor so people can dance or whatever. And then, you know, obviously we're leaving the seats in the balcony. But, you know, I just took a look at the space and, you know, ever since then, I guess it's been my, one of my missions to restore it.
Yeah. I think about Union Transfer down in Philadelphia. They have something like you're talking about. They have some, I think, seating upstairs and they have the flat floor. And I think you're right. And that in itself does lend it to a lot of events where people will stand. And I think that that's good. And that can be part of what you do. I'm sure you have other ideas as well. For people
I mean,
who,
we can also have, you know, huge weddings or, you know, any type of a banquet, you know, with rooms for tables, but then the spectacular stage. I mean, it's, we just had the folks from the Stage Workers Union, you know, by our office to talk, you know, about the future. And, you know, they were telling us that there is no stage between here in New York or here in Philadelphia that it comes even close to the size of it.
Wow.
You know? So it would be, again, a pretty unique event space, sort of bigger than anything we have, at least down here in Wilkes-Barre.
And that in itself is a great selling point for people. If people have never seen the Irem Temple in Wilkes-Barre, can you give us a little bit of the history of how it came to be and then maybe a little bit of history into how it had its decline?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm the most qualified to answer all this as I'm not a Mason or a Shriner, but I mean, obviously the Shriners are a subsect of the Masons. You know, they're most famous for all the tremendous work they've done with the children's hospitals. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the commercials on television. I think at this point there's 22 children's hospitals around the country that, you know, if you can't afford to pay, you don't pay. So it's pretty remarkable in terms of fraternal orders, what they've done in that respect. But, you know, obviously there's involved with the Shriner traditions, you know, is sort of owed to this Arabic mythology, you know. And so if you go to any Shriner's temple around the country, it's sort of is going to have a Middle Eastern vibe. And, you know, so it obviously looks like a mosque, but it's not, the Shriners are a secular organization. But, you know, that's the sort of why you have that form of the building. But, you know, as probably most folks listening to this know, I mean, the Shriners also have a location out in Dallas. And, you know, if we're being honest, as a seated theater, the Kirby's a much better venue. You know, again, the stage isn't as big, but by any other account, if you're going to sit to watch a show, the Kirby's a better place to do it, you know, so pretty quickly after the Kirby reopened, you know, the utility of the main auditorium at the Irem Temple, you know, did really lost a lot of the shows and things that they were doing. And that just sort of led to a lack of ability to justify keeping it. And, you know, the in the mid 2000s, the Wilkes-Barre Chamber of Commerce purchased the building with, you know, plans to do some of the things we're doing. But, that was prior to the 2008 financial crisis. We all remember that. And, you know, like sort of a lot of the plans were scuttled. And then a few years later, our group came in and the chamber was, you know, kind enough to not only give us the building, but actually give us some money for taking it off their hands. So, which was very kind of them. So, you know, and that's where we are here today. So,
and this has taken a Christian a long time and the,
oh, yeah.
It's been a slow churn. I don't think that there's anybody here today that doesn't realize that, something happened for your organization that really, I believe, will put a jolt into what you're doing. And I don't think that's all that you need, but I think it will certainly help you with some of your pressing needs.
Well, yeah. So we've been very fortunate to have a lot of great support from our legislators like Eddie Day and Marty Flynn. And, you know, we have also, the, you know, obviously the folks in the city of Wilkes-Barre, Mayor Brown, and Luzerne County, right? We got some ARPA funds. So, you know, we've been really fortunate enough for our elected leaders to see the value in our project. But with a lot of this money, it's all reimbursement grants. And, you know, you've got to spend it to get reimbursed. And you don't really have to spend it. You, like, to get reimbursed, you have to prove that you have all the money and more to get your reimbursement letter. So it's very, very high hurdles to actually tap into these funds. And fortunately, we jumped over one of those hurdles this week when Wayne Bank provided us with $2 million in bridge financing. And with that money, we will be able to do the...
No, we're good. No, phone, yeah, but, we can't okay. hear that part though. So
no, I'm good.
Yeah.
So the entire exterior of the building, you know, all the masonry, all the carpentry work and roof work on the top of the minarets, like not, the real roof of the building is fixed, 100%.
That's great.
Okay? You know, we spent $800,000+ doing all of that. So if you drive into Wilkes-Barre, you see a beautiful new green roof. But the little, we call them the gazebos at the top of the minarets, right? It's a little like wooden structure sitting at the top of the masonry. You know, that's all going to get rebuilt. And we hope to be, we will be bidding out the project in the next couple weeks here in February.
Very good.
So we have a number of, you know, interested Masons who've heard that this is coming down the pipeline. So we're quite excited that we'll come in under budget on what we were anticipating. A lot of people are excited to work on this project. They sort of want to be able to tell their grandkids, I repointed that up there. So,
oh, that's good. Yeah, and there are a lot of people in the valley that are good craftsmen and women. So hopefully they'll come forth and help you. So I'm glad that this is. We know this is the baby steps, Christian. We don't expect this venue to be open anytime soon. You know.
Well, I wouldn't know, but we hope to be open by the first quarter of next year. You know, if long as there's a few financing dominoes to fall, but there are things we should reasonably anticipate to happen. You know, if we, you know, things like getting a new market tax credit allocation, you know, the rest of the money is largely there due to, you know, again, the grants we've received and federal historic tax credits and everything. So, I mean, you know, one naming right donor would potentially get us a construction loan for the entire project. So
okay. Well,
we're very, very close.
Very good.
But, yeah.
Very good. So
I know you're a big history buff, so just anyone listening, I mean, the Performing Arts Center and big flat-floored hall is obviously going to pay the bills, but putting in a regional history museum that's going to partner with all the local historical societies and actually some of the Native American nations in upstate New York.
This is great. And Christian, I believe this will be one of several conversations that we'll have about where you stand, what's going on, how people can help. Obviously, that is part of your job, too, is encouraging people to donate to this project, right?
Go to iramtemplerestorationproject.com. I know it's a mouthful of a URL, but we've got donor options where you can earn, you know, concert ticket vouchers in the future. You know, if you're more into the museum stuff, some names on a plaque. We a one-time donation. We also have a system for taking recurring donations. So if you want to do like 25 a month for the next 2 years, you can get the same type of rewards and stuff when we're open. So
yeah,
thanks.
It'll come back to you tenfold, and you'll know that you were part of history if you do donate. Christian Weilich, thank you very much for being with us today. I know, obviously, you have other duties that you have to get back to, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. And okay. It is tax deductible, 501c3.
Beautiful.
So, thanks.
Oh, I could tell you're used to this fundraising stuff. So good job. We'll talk to you soon.
Not really, but I do my best.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Longtime friend of the show, Stacy Kyle, is here, and she is the 2025 Woman of Impact.
nominee, and we are proud to have you on the show and representing the American Heart Association.
Good morning, and thank you so much.
In your beautiful red, like us.
Thank you. We love you. And tell us about this.
The American Heart Association Women of Impact is a 9-week blind competition where 6 women from Northeastern PA were nominated and chosen as the Women of Impact nominee. We have to raise awareness, provide resources to our family, our friends, our community, as well as raising funds.
Awareness is a big thing, but you are raising some money with your, what is it? It's in the bag?
It's in the bag. It's an online purse raffle from today, February 7th through February 28th. People can purchase online raffle tickets through my Venmo or other sources. One raffle ticket is $20, 3 for $50, 6 for $100. And all of that money goes to the American Heart Association for research for women's heart health.
That's awesome. We want to give you a bump. We're going to take a photo of all of us together, and then I'm going to put your flyer in the comments so people can go and enter your raffle. Mm-hmm. And you have a very personal connection to the American Heart Association. Can you tell us some about that, how it's affected you?
Yes. Most of us, all of us, have been impacted by heart disease one way or another. My brother was born with congenital heart defects. My dad, unfortunately, passed away at 52 years old. I was 26. Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Gosh.
Thank you. One of my best friends has suffered a heart attack. A friend of mine, she had a stroke. So I know that we are all influenced by it one way or another. We need to combat this.
And also, not only being heart healthy, going in for checkups.
It's important.
Because I had no idea years ago that I had a heart murmur. And I went just to, my family doctor, and she found it. And discovered that I had to have heart surgery, which I never would have known.
Oh, God bless.
And who knows what would have happened if that was, wasn't detected early.
Yeah, right. Preventive measures are the best measures.
I tear up thinking about him because he's young when it happened. Your friend is young when it happened. People think of it as an older person's thing. It is not.
Nope. It's
birth.
It's
all ages.
It doesn't just pick one person.
Thank you for all the awareness you're raising. Thank you for your fundraiser. And we're going to help you out. You're doing amazing work. Thank you, Stacey.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for all your texts to our show because you support us, too. You're very funny and sweet and smart, and we just love you to death.
Thank you.
And we go way back. Back to the St. Vincent de Paul kitchen days where you brought in a crew of guys here every year.
Shout out, guys. You're all amazing.
So I'm glad we're still connected, and we'll get the word out for you, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you for joining us this week on Special Edition. Special Edition is a weekly public affairs presentation of Odyssey Wilkes-Barre. I'm Brian Hughes. Thanks again for listening.